My name is Maurice LaPointe. I was born in St. Claude, Manitoba, which is approximately about 60 some odd miles from Winnipeg, west of Winnipeg, number 2 highway. I was raised on a farm until the war broke out in 1939, I think. And I went to country school to grade 8. I had a grade 8 education. And military experience, I had none whatsoever before World War II. I had no military experience at all. I joined the Army in September, I think it's the 26th or 27th of September, 1939. I joined the Grenadiers. Captain Bowman was the officer that I joined with, and I was put into C Company. I trained in Minto Armories for the first 3 or 4 months that we were in the Army until we moved to Fort Osborne Barracks. Then, while I was in Fort Osborne Barracks, I was picked out for military police. I was police in Winnipeg for a couple of months before we went to Jamaica. Going to Jamaica, I was told I was going to be on the regimental police. So when we got to Jamaica, the first quarter guard was set up by the military police, which is the only guard I ever done the whole time I was in Jamaica. After that, I went on strictly as a police. 16, I think it's approximately about 16 months that we were in Jamaica, and I was police continuously there. I like Jamaica very much. I like the sports. I took part in quite a bit of sports in Jamaica. I loved it. I remember playing ball on Christmas Day in 1940, I guess it was. Yes, in Christmas Day 1940, we played a game of baseball, and also on January 1st, 1941, we played a game of baseball, which to me was a big deal, because here in Canada, you don't play ball too much during the wintertime. It was a second draft from Jamaica, which was sometime in September. And I was given 2 weeks' leave. I come home. I went back again to the Robinson Building. There again, I worked there as a police, again, a regimental police. Nothing drastically happened all this time. It was strictly military work, and nothing out of the ordinary happened too much, until we were told we were going to West. I think we left on the 25th of October. I think that was it, because it took us 2 days to get to Vancouver, and we boarded the train on the 27th of October, which happened to, that date I remember quite clearly, because that's my birthday, and that's the day we got on the boat. So I think we left Winnipeg on the 25th of October. There was rumors where we were going. Lots of them said we were just going to the West Coast for some more training. But when we got on the boat, we thought we were going to South Africa or North Africa, I think it was. But eventually we ended up in Hong Kong. Hong Kong. I can't say too much about Hong Kong in peacetime, because we were only there 17 days, I think it was 17 or 18 days, until the 7th December 1941, and then the war started. Well, a war. All I can remember was being very cold, hungry, and awful thirsty about the war. It was a nightmare as far as I was concerned. I don't It's pretty hard to say what happened during the war. I was with attached to B Company. I was with them that night that practically the whole company was wiped out. I can't remember what date that was, but two platoons were completely wiped out, and the platoon that I was with ended up with about half a dozen guys. But
do you remember what position this was, where you were at this time?
We were in Mount, as far as I know, I think it was Mount Cameron. I think this is the hill that they claim it was Mount Cameron. I think the rest of the boys, quite a few of the boys that I knew real well, were either hurt real bad there or killed. The boys themselves, I thought, did a magnificent job as far as I could see, because it was... I don't know. I have, my mind is kind of a blank on that. I don't like to think of bad things, and that was one of the worst times of my life as far as I was concerned, that especially that last week of before, from the, or approximately around the 17th of December to the 25th of December, was a terrific week. We had no food, no water, and no sleep. That was the worst week of any time in my life, as far as I can. But anyway, on Christmas Day, they told us it was Christmas. To us, it was just another nightmare. In the afternoon, I heard about the surrender around 4 o'clock, but we were still fighting. We actually didn't surrender till around 6 o'clock that night. I can't say what platoon it was, because it was, or what company there were even, because there was a few of these and a few of that, and there was even some English regiments, or Scottish regiments, I guess they were, part of the Scottish regiments were mixed up with this, but I remember around 6 o'clock at night, they told us that we had to surrender. When we did surrender, I had a revolver, which had 4 shells in it. I had a Tommy gun, which had, I'd say, about 8 or 10 shells in it. That was all I had, and 1 grenade. That was the extent of my ammunition when they told us we had to surrender. I didn't even have enough for one good burst out of my Tommy gun, or Thompson machine gun. We broke all our... I remember this. I set the grenade off in the bush. I threw it into the bush. Exploded it into the bush. I broke my Thompson machine gun and the revolver. I pulled it apart so that nobody could fix that. And that was all the ammunition and all the fighting equipment that I had when we were taken prisoner. I remember quite a being march by the Japanese quite a piece from one place to the other, till eventually we were brought to a building. Now I can't tell you the building's name. I did remember them, and I did know the building's name, but right now offhand I can't tell you what it is. I know they marched us through the town, and when we ended up, we were within a stone throw or so from where we had started. I never did find out why they did that forward to us at all, but they seemed to have marched us through a long ways anyway for no good reason that I could see. But that was Christmas Day, 1941. No, I should say that was the next day, the 26th of December, 1941. I was sent to Bone Road then. I spent a couple months in Bone Road. Come back to camp. I went to North Point Camp. And from there, we started to work on that Kai Tak Airport. I was kind of foolish as far as we were concerned, as far as I was concerned, because it was all manual labor. We carried a hill, moved a hill down into a, in other words, we took down a hill and leveled it off to make a fair airport or a fair runway. Then I got sick again with dysentery. I had recurrence of malaria, which I did get malaria in Jamaica while I was in Jamaica. I did get some bit of malaria, or as they say, dengue fever, I think is what we called it, but it was a mild form of malaria. I got again malaria in North Point Camp, and again I was sent back to Bone Road. I stayed in Bone Road, which is a military hospital there in Hong Kong. I stayed there for another month or so, and then when I was sent back, they had moved all the Grenadiers to Shamshapo. You want to stop? We were in Shamshapo. When I got to Shamshapo, they were getting ready for a draft to send to Japan. That was in the fall of 1941. And I was then picked to go to Japan. I think there was approximately around 500 of us left. We had a doctor with us, Captain Reed. And the senior NCO was our RSM, Mr. Keenan, ISM Keenan. We were taken to a shipbuilding yard in Tokyo and Yokohama, between Tokyo and Yokohama. I think the name was 3D, I think was a prison camp's name. We were building mostly ships there. I don't think we were doing that big of a job of it, because we were only putting out about two ships a month. We heard the Americans were putting out at least two a day or something of that description, so it made us feel pretty good that we were working so slow. We stayed there till in March 1945. I seen the Doolittle raid. At time the Doolittle dropped incendiary bombs there in Tokyo. It was a terrific wind that night coming in. I don't know what side the wind was coming, what direction the wind was, but it lit up the whole sky. Burned quite a bit of Tokyo.
What was the food like while you were in prison camp?
Actually, the food the first while that we were in Japan, in that 3D camp, at the start, it was fairly well good. But as time went on, I'd say 1942, it was pretty good. And then in 1943, they started to cut down on us. And the longer we stayed there, the worse it got. When we first got there, we used to get a bit of meat, a bit of rice, quite a bit of rice. But then as time went on, the meat was cut out. We got a little fish instead, and gradually that was cut out. And eventually, pretty near all we were getting was rice and beans. Towards the beginning of 1945, we were getting very little food, hardly enough to keep us alive. Quite a few of the boys were suffering with beriberi by this time. But anyway, in March, the planes flew over and said that if the shipyard wasn't closed down on the 1st of April, that it would be totally demolished. I got a pamphlet. I found a pamphlet and read it. This is what I did. So a couple of days after that, no Japanese workers showed up at all at the camp and at the shipyard. The next day, we were taken out ourselves. We were sent up north. I think it's north, way up north anyway, to the Northern Ireland, to an iron mine. We got there sometimes in April. I can't tell you the exact date. I recollect the date at all now, but we stayed there from sometimes in April till the end of the war. That's where we were on August the 15th, 1945, when the war was. We were kept there for a month. The Americans flew over and dropped us some food and clothing about a week or two after the war was over. And we started eating a little better, putting on weight, and getting half-decent clothes to wear. I had a pair of coveralls that lasted me all the time. I was in prison camp, believe me. They were dirty. They were greasy. I think prisoners stood by themselves. A little incident after the war was over. I didn't know we were going to get new clothes to come home with. So I took this pair of coveralls to a Japanese lady. And honestly, them coveralls stood by themselves. They were so greasy and dirty. When I got them back, they were absolutely white. And they were clean. They were honestly clean. But she washed them for nothing, because before we got onto the boat, they made us throw it all away and give us all American Navy clothes. We moved out of that camp on the 15th of September, 1945. And we went to hospital ship. We were on this hospital ship for 2 days. We come to Tokyo Harbor. And there we got on another, boarded another bigger ship. I understood there was something in the neighborhood of 6,000 or 7,000 men on it, all being repatriated. We went to Guam. We stayed in Guam for a week, about 8 or 10 days, I think. Then we come to San Francisco. Stayed in San Francisco for 2 nights and 2 days. And every time we get to one of these places, of course, we had to have a medical. I got more medicals in 1945, in that fall of 1945, in Chica. I care to remember. From San Francisco, we come to Seattle, and then on to Victoria. And again, a medical in Seattle, a medical in Victoria. We stayed in Victoria for 10 days, and we were sent. We were allowed to come home. I left Victoria on the 26th of October. Again, I remember that because the 27th is my birthday and I was on my way home. I got home on the 28th of October, the day after my birthday. I bet one of my friends I'd be home for my birthday on the 27th. I lost $5 on that bet. I got home on the 28th of October. Oh, before that, all the time I was in Hong Kong, I never received a word from my wife. And when I got out in 1945, when I got out of prison camp, I didn't know whether I had a wife or a family or any relatives at all. After not hearing from them for 4 years, but when I got on the hospital ship, they asked me if I wanted to send a telegram home, so I sent a telegram home. Not to Portage, where my wife was, to St. Cloud, because I didn't even know she was in Portage. I didn't know where she was or anything. But Eventually the telegram got to her anyway. I think she still got the telegram. And I didn't hear from them until I got to Victoria. When I got to Victoria, there was a letter waiting for me from my wife and pictures of the kids.
How about Red Cross parcels? Did you receive any of them during your imprisonment?
If I recollect right, yes, we did get some. If I recollect right, it all totaled up to 4 parcels. Now, I might be wrong in that. It might be 4 half parcels I got, because I remember a couple of times, I remember getting 1 full parcel once, and then getting a couple of half parcels. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I always seems to, whenever they talk Red Cross parcels, it always comes up that I got 4 boxes. A Red Cross parcel is a set box of some description, and always comes up in my mind that I got 4 of them. Whether I got 3 or 4 half parcels once and then 1 full one, to me it amounts to 4, as far as I can remember now, it comes up to, I always figure 4 full parcels. That is all. That is what I had to mind. I never got a letter all the time we were there. Some of the boys got a few odd letters. But we were allowed to write. I was allowed to write, the 4 years I was there, 4 letters. They were to be printed. And so many words in each letter, and that was all we were allowed to write. You weren't allowed to write any about anything that you were doing or anything like that. All you were supposed to write about was that you were well and you look forward to coming home, which is very basic. I remember getting home on the 28th of October, and my daughter come running up to me, and I couldn't believe it was her. 4 years of she had grown. When I last seen her, she was kind of a fat, chubby girl. She was only 4 years old. She still had baby fat, and she was kind of fat, chubby. This 9-year-old girl come running up to me. A tall girl, slim, very slim. I thought she was one of my sister's girls, to be quite frank. I couldn't figure out that she was my girl. But eventually it was, I sorted her out in my mind. She was my daughter. She was now 9 years old. The boys, both, one boy I'd only seen for a couple of times when I come back from Jamaica, he was now 5 years old. He was, they were both, didn't know what to make of me at all. Because on my way home, when I got out of prison camp, I weighed 136 pounds. By the time I got home here in Portage, I weighed 214 pounds.
What was your normal weight when you went to?
My normal weight, and that was in good shape, I weighed 198 pounds. That was the best weight that I would be in good shape. I think when I was taken prisoner, I weighed about 198 pounds. Or when I should say when I left Portage here to go to Hong Kong, I weighed 198 pounds. While I was in Jamaica, I weighed 214 pounds. Incidentally, when I got to Victoria and was given a medical there, they wouldn't, I had quite an argument with the medical officer there because he wanted me to stay in the hospital in Victoria. He said I was too fat. I was in no way was I going to stay in Victoria and not come home, so I told him I'd quit eating and take care and start getting exercise so that I could put my weight down to normal. Another thing too, we were pretty closely shaved when we got home. Just I'd say around the 1st of August 1945, a week or two before war was over, the Japanese come along in the camp and clipped everybody right down to the skin, our hair. Well, to try to save our razors, we had all grown mustaches. And a mustache don't look too good on me. I had a thick mustache, a big one, and no hair. When I got home, I had about a half an inch of hair, maybe a quarter of an inch of hair on my head. I didn't look very good, I'll tell you that much. And fat the way I was. No wonder the kids were kind of scared of me. Anything between my pictures they had of me before and what I looked like when I got home was purely coincidental, I guess. But anyway, I got home and I started to go back and forth to Winnipeg to Deer Lodge.
While you were in prison camp, do you remember, I'll ask a few questions, like radios, did you know if there were any radios, or how did you get any information while you were in the camps?
We had a radio in this last camp that we were in. There was a few Americans in there, and one of the Americans that was in there was a petty officer off the, one of their big battleships. He's quite a radio man. He manufactured a radio out of copper wire, tin can, bully beef cans, and I can't remember what all else, batteries, and we could get the CBC. We weren't allowed to say that we could get this CBC news every day because we didn't want this radio to be taken away from it. So what they did, some of us was in on it, every night at 7 o'clock somebody would listen to the news, go back to work the next day, and then spread the news around at work. And Jack, I will admit, we must have drove the Jap pretty near up the wall because they could never figure out how we got this news. They thought it was the Japanese giving us the news. They were told not to give us no news of any description, but we seemed to come up with this news continuously. We knew when the war was over. We knew when VE Day come. We knew when when the Germans give up or surrendered. And we had all the up-to-date news because we listened to the CBC pretty near every night at 7 o'clock. But you should have seen the faces on the Japanese after the war was over when we showed them this, I guess you could call it a crystal set, something like what our old crystal sets used to be, something similar to that. I wasn't too much of a radio man, but I listened to it a couple of times.
Where was it hidden?
It was hidden up in the above the bunks. We had a double-tiered bunk where we were, and it was up in the what you call an attic, I guess it was. It was hid there. There was a couple of boards loosened up, and it was shoved up in there. It was a pretty nice radio, as a matter of fact. We thought it was pretty good. It was run by batteries, coal cell batteries. Some of the boys were working, could get a hold of these batteries, they brought them in. Others that could bring in copper wire would bring in copper wire wrapped around their bodies or something to get past the guards.
While you were in the camp, did you have any form of recreation, or did you sort of work all day and didn't have any time for it, or did you?
We had a little form of recreation in Hong Kong at the start, but the last, in 3D camp, our recreation was very minimal. We've got 2 days a day, 2 days a month off, which is generally on a Thursday. Every second Thursday we got a day off. But that day was supposed to be used to wash your, to clean your place up or your quarters up and clean your clothes as best you could, and also have a bath and it was mostly taken up. We had no recreation hardly at all. All the time we were in Japan, as far as I can remember, we had very, very little recreation. The last place we were in, we had no recreation whatsoever, except amongst ourselves when we played cards, played crib, or other little bits of games that we put up together. No, we had no outside recreation, you might say, as far as sports was concerned or anything like that.
How about escape attempts? Did you ever think about trying to escape from any of the camps?
No, I never tried to. I never thought of trying to escape because it was almost hopeless. We knew we were on the Japanese island, and if you've ever been to Japan, white or Canadian, let's put it that way, a Canadian walking out amongst the Japanese stuck out like a sore thumb. He was at least anywhere from 6 to 12 inches taller than anybody else around there, and he'd had to be crawling along on his hands and his knees pretty near all the time to be from escaping from being noticed. And I didn't, there was no way that we could cross that the ocean to get into China. There might have been a chance in China, but being what we couldn't talk a word of very little Chinese, I don't know. I don't think that anybody could have made any attempt or succeeded in any attempt to get away whatsoever, as far as I can see. One thing that has always, now when I think back, it never crossed my mind that the Allies would lose the war. It never once crossed my mind that they would lose the war. And yet, when I come back and read history of the war in Germany, there was a couple of times it had come pretty close to it could have went either way. But it was just a matter to us. It was just a matter of time. How much time would it be before we get out? And that's as true as I can put it. It never crossed our mind that we'd lose the war. It was just a matter of how long would it take to win it.
Did you think it would take close to 4 years? Or did you think
it would be sooner? No, we always set a date maybe 3 or 4 months ahead of time. Perhaps it'd be Christmas. And then Christmas come along and go, or New Year's, or then we'd put it on till Easter, and then come Easter, the 1st of July, and then come my birthday in October. And we just kept working 3 or 4 months at a time ahead. Mm-hmm. It would always be 3 or 4 months from now. That date would come and go. It would be the next 3 or 4 months, or possibly the same as that date that I took, the same as that bet that I took with this man, one of my friends, a $5 bet that we'd be home for my birthday in 1945. I missed it by one day, but it was just a shot in the dark. I think that bet was made sometime in May or in 1945. It was just it was something I guess we just built up to make our resistance last, more or less.
Well, you were sure then that you were going to win as soon as you saw the American planes coming over and bombing, did you? But you didn't know how long it would be here.
Well, we thought that would shorten it quite a bit. But the first plane we seen come over, we thought it'd be just a matter of weeks before it would be over. Mm-hmm. And yet it was well on to 6 or 8 months later. But we thought a week or two they'd be bombing the Imperial Palace, and that would be it. But it didn't work out that way.
What were the guards like in the prison camp? Were they fair to you, or did you think of them, most of them?
Well, as far as I was concerned, they were doing a job. Some of them were a little more zealous, I guess is what the word would be, a little more efficient than the others. But as a whole, I'd say that they weren't any worse than anyone else. I have no animosity whatsoever to the Japanese people. Most of them was doing a job. They had a job to do, and they were told to do it, and this is what they did. It was one, a Kamloops kid. He was going to show us that he was a little better than we were, because he'd been raised, born and raised, I understand, and educated here in Canada, but I still carry a scar from him. He hit me over the head one day with his sword, the flat of his sword. I still carry that scar. But except for him and possibly one or two other younger guys, or here in Canada we would call them punks. They thought they were a little smarter. But as a whole, I'd say they were, the guards, our guards, the ones that we had, were not too bad. Even the people that we were working with, they weren't too bad. None of them were that awful bad.
Mm-hmm. How about when you were on the work crews in Hong Kong and in Japan? Did you try and deliberate sabotage while you were working? Or?
Oh, we tried it to a certain extent. A lot of times we did little things that seems kind of foolish in a way, but to us it was a big deal at the time. I know some of them did some pretty big, I heard that they had done some pretty big stuff, but as far as I'm concerned, little things such as wasting oil, deliberately wasting oil, or deliberately doing something wrong, you know, some little thing that might take them maybe half an hour or so to fix up again. I never did have a possible chance to do something real big, let's say, but we always kept up our own spirits by doing little odd little things wrong. I've been working, I would never think of doing it here at all.
How about when you came back? Did your 3.5 years in prison, has that affected you in any way after the war?
Oh, I think it has. I think it has affected me considerable, I'd say. I'm not a medical officer to say, but I would say out in the farm, I was one of the healthiest guys you could ever see. I was really a healthy, I was never sick in my life hardly at all, except I'd had pneumonia, I guess, once or twice before the war, but except for that, and that was strictly my own fault, I got that. I could work out in the farm, I worked 12, 13 hours a day all summer long, and it never affected me. After I come home, all this, suddenly the 3.5 years seemed to have piled on about 15 or 20 years or something, maybe more, because I was suddenly from a healthy, husky, hard-working guy, to suddenly I couldn't take that kind of work any longer. I just couldn't do it. I would get tired. I would get tired before the half of the day was over. Yes, I think it has affected that. In that way, it had, I put on, instead of 3.5 years, I'd say I aged possibly 10, 15, maybe 25 years to what it was. When I come home, I was only like 28 years old. I should have still been in my prime. Most boys right now that hadn't been to overseas at 28 are still in their very good prime, and I had passed that already, I think. One little incident I'd like to tell you about while we were in 3D. Perhaps it helped me quite a bit. I know it gave me a lot of extra food and extra cigarettes. There was three Canadians working at this certain job that I was at. Two Royal Rifles. One's name was Gordon Hutchison, the other fellow, I just can't remember his name, all I remember him by is Alf. There was a little incident about him I'd like to say after this. I got to learn a bit of Japanese And one fellow that I was working with, he was in the black market outside the shipbuilding yard, which was all enclosed, and all the civilians, Japanese civilians that went out of this yard, was searched at the gate as they went out. We weren't searched till we got to the camp. So between him and I, we worked out this little deal. We all carried our haversacks, little haversacks. I borrowed one or got one somehow or other. I can't remember how I got it, but I got two of them. And I give him one. And I took the other. We would put this lead and copper and all this thing that he could use as in the black market into one kit bag, and he'd take the other. And as we were walking down the road, maybe anywhere from 350 to 400, possibly more, fellows walking down, and the guards used to want so many walk up on the front and so many walk at the back. I'd try and get in the center of the line, and this chap, this Japanese, would walk alongside me, and we'd trade bags. When he was going through the gate, of course, he was searched. There was nothing in the kit bag except a couple of dishes that we carried to work with us, and I'd pass him this here bag that had lead and copper and different things in it. And on the road, we exchange bags, and when I get to the camp, I had my kit bag or my haversack with my dishes. The next day, he was always that we'd do that. We didn't do that every day, but we did that maybe once or twice a week or whenever we thought we were lucky enough to get away with it. The next day, he'd have a couple of packages of cigarettes for me and extra rice and some fish and soybeans and different things. This went on how long? I don't know. Perhaps 3, 4, or 5 months. I just can't remember how long it went on now. But suddenly he quit. I found out he come in 2 or 3 days later in Japanese uniform. He had been called up to the army. He was a sergeant in the Japanese army. I didn't hear about him no more until we got to Guam. A couple of us were walking down by Guam, down by the prison camp in Guam. Americans had a big prison camp there, and suddenly this chap hollers out La Pointo, which is the way the Japanese pronounce my name, La Pointo. And lo and behold, here's my Japanese friend in prison camp. So I had a little chat with him, and I asked American guards if I could give them a couple of some cigarettes. And they thought I was crazy because to give a Japanese a cigarette, but actually this fellow had treated me pretty good. Anyway, if he had made some money on the black market with the stuff that we had smuggled out, between the two of us, we had made a pretty good deal out of it. That was one incident that I remember quite vividly because it was always something that I pulled over on the Japanese anyway. Anyways, Japanese had helped me to do it. Another one, Alf, what his last name is, I don't know. But when we got to Victoria, he was celebrating his 21st birthday. I'd say around the 20th or 21st of October, 1945. He was celebrating his 21st birthday. He never had a beer in his life before. We had a pretty good time there in Victoria with Alf. I wish I'd know what happened to him, because he was quite a character. He was a pretty nice kid all around.
Just getting back to the present time, do you think the Canadian government has treated you fairly since 1945? What's your opinion on the Canadian government?
Oh, the Canadian government, I guess, When we talk about the Canadian government, don't we talk about ourselves? I guess we do, to a certain extent. Yes, they treated us, I'd say, not too bad. They're a little, to me, they were a little slow. That was all that I've got against them. They took an awful long time to get around to doing what they should have done 20 years ago. I know in my case, had I got the pension I'm getting now 25 years ago, it would have made the whole difference in the world. See, I had 3 kids when I come home. One was just starting school. And it was pretty rough sleighing there for about 8 or 10 years that I come back from overseas to get the kids through school, plus their clothing and being fed, feeding them and taking care of them. If had I got what I understand was should have come been coming to us, it would have been a great help indeed.
So you have no animosity towards the Japanese people today?
None whatsoever. They were doing their job, I was doing mine. I imagine had I been in their position, I would have done the same thing. I know a lot of the boys did the same thing in Japan, Jamaica. They guarded their at the internment camp the same as what the Japanese did to us. And except for an odd one, like I say, the Japanese people as a whole, I have no animosity whatsoever against them.
And just as a final question, what are your thoughts on war today? Do you think it's necessary?
I think war is the cruelest, most, there's no word to describe it. I think the sooner that people learn to live together and fight out their differences, except over a table and with words instead of bullets and bombs and stuff like that, and hardships to not only to the soldiers but to the families, to the relatives, friends of the soldiers. I think it's the most cruel thing that was ever invented in our society.